Hey everyone, welcome into Morning Invest. My name is Natalie Morris. I'm filling in for Clayton Morris, who has taken the day off on a boys' weekend golfing. We gave him the day off. We unchained him from this desk. And I'm filling in. You're in good hands, though. I am an experienced broadcaster as well. And I'm going to tell you the news with maybe a little bit less irkiness in my voice. Clayton's always so irked, right? If you came here for that, I'm going to have to put it on a little. Clayton likes to dress formal on Fridays, so I did the same because he told me to. This dress, by the way, is a Halston. I became inspired by the new Netflix show. Let me know if you're watching that in the chat. It's a fun little show with Ewan McGregor, and I have not fit into this dress for over 5 years. And so I thought, well, let's see if it fits. It fits, mostly. It's a little bunchy there. It's supposed to be. It's not actually by Halston, the designer. It's an H by Halston, so like his continued brand, but I felt like I needed to let you know that because I am not truly a couture-owning person. But today we're going to talk about taxes, not fashion. If you came here for fashion, PM me later. Maybe you can teach me something. We're going to talk about the president releasing his $80 billion tax plan. Now, he has been discussing this for a long time. Wait, did I not let you do the intro? Should I stop here and let you do that?
Oh, it's like what generally does is like give the intro of what's coming up. And then as soon as you're done, say, and it's going to start right now. And then we run the intro.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to start right now. I'm going to do the intro because we got it.
All
so
right. Here we
hold,
go.
Please. Roll it. Now I'm ready to talk taxes. Let's do it. Who's excited about taxes? Now, I know not everyone likes to read about taxes or talk about taxes or anything of the sort. I do want to talk about taxes because I am concerned about this new $80 billion presidential tax. We're going to call it a tax proposal. So it looks like this. If you are in the mood to read about taxes, and it is, I don't remember how many pages, but I read it this morning and it is not a sure thing. So we don't have to worry too much about it because we know that Republicans are going to fight like heck about it. But I think that there are good sides on both, good points on both sides. And I want to discuss it because my concern over this is having an IRS that is more like a Gestapo. You know, the IRS right now, I want to say the only reason really that they are held back from being a Gestapo-like organization is that they just don't have the money or the technology for it. It's kind of crazy when they talk about the infrastructure that the IRS is running on currently. It's not exactly, you know, DOS level, but it might as well be. Actually, it might be. They say that their software right now runs on programming language that isn't even used anymore. So they don't specifically say which one. Probably they can't. That would be national security. They also say that they are, because of this old infrastructure, they are subject to 1.4 billion cyber attacks per year. So you would think then maybe they don't let us know what software they use now or if they use some kind of proprietary software. That being said, there are four things that the president wants that he wants to spend $80 billion on the next 10 years. Okay, so what are those four things? First, he wants to hire. IRS head Charles Reddick has been asking for a long time now, and he has been testifying in front of Congress that, hey, look, we're letting a lot of tax dollars go right now. If you give me the guard dogs, I'm going to go get them, right? He estimates that we could be earning $700 billion. Let me find the chart and show it to you. Let's look at this. In the next 10 years, if we give them this money, right, if Congress approves it, this is exactly how it's going to be raised. It will raise revenue through 2040 by, let's see, this is in billions, 2.3 billion, right? So over the life of this, it will be something like 700. I'm going to look at those numbers again. So what they're trying to let us know here is that there's a big opportunity cost to not doing this, and they're really upset about that. So they want to expand the workforce by 10% per year because they're saying so many audits are not happening. They want to make better third-party connections. Now, this is something I'm scratching my head about a lot. How many people in the chat use a program like TurboTax or what's the other one? H&R Block, something like that. Have you ever used that, David? I have before.
Oh, yeah. I used to use only that stuff. But after you get into like business and everything, you kind of have to hire
it's
somebody that can.
Hard.
Yeah, it's just too hard.
Yeah. You get that little helper assistant coming up and they're like, are you doing this right? And you're like, I don't know. I think. So yes, it's best. I mean, I think my philosophy in life is as you get older, you should upgrade certain things in your life, right? Like your olive oil and your skincare and your CPA, right? These are signs that you're a grown-up. So definitely you always should be aiming at a higher quality CPA so that you're doing things better, so that you're taking advantage of all the, you know, tax incentives that are out there, and that you do it right and you trust someone. So the IRS, or the president, is saying that the IRS does not right now have really good connections for third party information. So for instance, when a company files their W-2s, the IRS doesn't just automatically have access to that. Does that sound crazy to you? It sounds kind of crazy to me. Like if this is a government form and it's being filed, they should just, you know, automatically have that. Now, I saw on Twitter recently, I wish that I still had this tweet, but I don't. Someone had said that there are lobbyists from, say, TurboTax, Tax Act, which was what someone just said they use, H&R Block, who prevent these kind of connections. Because if someone's just a straight W-2 paycheck type person and that is filed, the IRS kind of knows, right, what you owe. Why is that not just like they tell you, you pay it or you get that refund? Like, why is there this middle business, right? On the one hand, because you could be missing out on important deductions, such as certain expenses, certain solar tax credits, what have you, right? So you wouldn't want that to automatically just, we have your W-2, you owe this much, right? You want to tell them what incentives you've taken advantage of. But on the other hand, couldn't there be a more streamlined system, right? Where we wouldn't have the need for these types of software programs. Why wouldn't the government just do it? Why wouldn't they just say, we have your W-2, here you go. Which things here did you take advantage of? Okay, pay us. Now, this person on Twitter, who I have not verified, and I do not know if it's true, but do you think maybe there is lobbyist efforts that keep that from happening, that keep the government from doing something just such as this? So then, I mean, I think those programs are actually a bit expensive for what you're getting. Don't you? TurboTax and that kind of thing.
I do. And it seems like inherently they kind of want it to be like confusing, because think of all the money they make going after people. And plus the people that have money that can afford to, you know, pay somebody to look through that stuff, They get all these write-offs and stuff. You know, it kind of favors them in a way, because,
yes,
you know, they get, yeah, all the advantages and everything that we don't know about. And it's like they can come after us. And I would be, you know, curious to know how much they get in fees on us for not paying on time and all this other stuff.
Who, the tax preparation software?
The IRS and stuff, like, you know.
Oh, yes. They charge you an interest rate, and that is, yeah, that will be on your, for instance, if you pay in September, like most businesses do, you still have to pay what you didn't pay between April and September. The government doesn't just give you a interest-free loan for a certain amount of time. So the fees are pretty, you know, standard, and they're usury, which is an SAT word. It means that it's standard amount of interest. It's not too high or too low. So they want to make these connections. That's in the president's proposal. They also want to update their technology. We talked about that. And they want to go on after unregulated tax preparers, or what they call ghost preparers. I was not aware that this is a thing. But apparently there are people who will prepare your taxes and not sign in the tax preparation signature list or put their information, because they don't want to be asked about it. They don't want to be challenged. You should not be using someone like this. I didn't know that was a thing. But apparently it is. Now, ghost preparers are allowed because a court struck down a program to regulate tax preparers in 2013. I also did not know that you couldn't use a real CPA. Apparently you can do this. You shouldn't, but you can. So you could just go to some dude on a corner office and let them prepare your tax and not know if they're properly accredited. So I think you should make an effort to protect yourself from this by making sure that your tax preparer does sign and also withholding payment until they do. Now, I have definitely done like TurboTax for friends, but I didn't sign for them, you know? So again, this is a tricky area. And I think the government wants to make it accessible so everyone can file their taxes. But at the same time, they won't regulate all tax preparers. So now they're saying they do want this. They do absolutely want regulated tax preparers. So what does that mean if you go to your friend's house and use their TurboTax, you know, and you do it? So then should you sign for your friend? And then are you liable for your friend? I don't know. I think this is tricky.
Yeah, that just sounds like it can go bad, you know, go south.
It can go bad and you can be punished, right?
It's like now you're going to have this, don't loan your friends money and don't do your friends taxes.
Yeah, right? So let's say, okay, you made a mistake. You accidentally used your business credit card to, let's see, buy something that is not a business expense. I don't know. Give me an example. A trip to Disneyland. Okay. You accidentally bought your Disneyland tickets with your business card, and you shouldn't have done that, and you did not catch it, right? So you deducted that as business income, as a business expense, and then the IRS catches you. And they said, oh, well, you bought $500 worth of Disneyland tickets and as a business expense. That is illegal commingling. You can't just take a personal perk, right? Unless you have a reason. And so we want you to pay back that $500, pay taxes on that $500, right? Or they want you to pay taxes on that $500 as business income, and they will assess a fee to it, right? And so the fee is to you. You could then turn to your friend and say, well, you didn't catch it and you signed my tax returns. So now I'm going to sue you, right? Or is there some kind of liability waiver on who does your taxes? This is scary to me. And it's scary that the IRS just wants to know these things automatically, you know? Well, I mean, I wouldn't put it past our government for like turning on your webcam.
Yeah, think about, like, I live by this. Anything that the government does, the cost goes up and the quality goes down. And it's like, this will be the same thing. If they get their hands in here, then it's like there's going to be so many things that can happen, but it's only going to happen to the little guy. It's not going to happen to the people who, you know, are making billions and paying $700 a year in taxes. It's just going to happen to us.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was analyzing this chart that was in the president's proposal today, because I wanted to see who is getting audited, who is really getting audited, and who do they want then to continue to get audited, right? Okay, so this column here is who was audited in 2010, and this column here is who was audited in 2018, and this is the decline. Now, they're saying this is a bad thing. Audits went down. This is a bad thing. We need to be auditing so we can catch more people in the act, right? If you look here, there was a 93% chance of audit for all filers. But look at this row. Individuals had a 1.11% chance of getting audited and a 0.59% chance of getting audited in 2018. Now jump down to corporations, and it is higher. Corporations are audited more often than individuals. I did not think that that was the case.
Actually, I wouldn't have either.
I thought that it was. And if you look at corporations with assets of $20 billion or more, it's almost a certainty in 2010 that they were getting audited. 100% of them, right? But in 2018, it was 50% chance
But I wonder, I mean, you have to wonder too, if it's like, you know, I remember back in the day when I was a manager for a company and OSHA would come in, you could literally pay them a little bit of money and things would be okay, right? So I wonder how much of that is extortion. Like, if you just pay us a little bit of hush money,
yeah,
you know, we're...
I think once an audit happens, it's a pretty strong paper trail. And, you know, I really, really, really highly recommend Tom Wheelwright's book, Tax-Free Wealth, because he writes about how this works. And I have a couple tips actually from this on how to make sure that you are ready for an audit and compliant. You know, Tom does say that corporations have a lower likelihood of audit, but this book was written before 2010, I think. Even still, it would be interesting though to see how many of those audits resulted in increased revenue or penalties. They don't always. Sometimes you get audited and they say, we don't understand why you took this deduction. And you say, well, I meant to, I did it deliberately. Here's all the paperwork. Why? And then you don't have to, that doesn't increase revenue for the government. That's happened to us before where they said, what did you do here? And we said, we did this on purpose. Here's the paperwork. And we intended to declare that income this year. And then we paid it the following year. And they said, fine, we didn't get a penalty. We did it right. It's just there was something beyond my pay grade that I don't completely understand about certain type of income. But we had our, you know, my books were legit. My books were good. So, you know, I don't know. I think that I am one of those who gets worried about giving any one government agency too much power, especially the IRS. Now, the Republicans don't want this. Why? Because they represent big business, and big business is the one who is sticking their neck on the line, right? To have businesses to pay people, and they want to take maximum tax deductions, understandably so, right? That's how I feel, understandably so. And so Republicans will push back about this. The IRS was running on a very tight budget under the Trump administration, and Congress will have to approve it both ways. So here are Natalie's nerdy tips for making sure you are ready for an audit and making sure that, because, you know, you have to pretend when you do your taxes or any of your finances that someone's coming to look. Hopefully nobody ever does. But if you are not prepared, if they do, it will be so expensive and time consuming. So what you should do is every time you have something that you are going to deduct, you must have that receipt. You must. So for instance, the other day, Clayton used his ATM card and took money out of our business account for a business expense. And then later on that day, I said, where is that receipt? And he's like, oh, I didn't take it, because the ATM gives you an option of, you know, going paperless just to save the planet. And he was like, I didn't take it. And I was like, what? Because he can't just take that. That's income then. If he's going to take that and then use it to buy lollipops, right? And that's not our business. Then I don't have proof that that money was business money, right? Now that's income to Clayton. So anytime. If you're so glad in the chat room that you're not married to me, because anytime there is any business expense, write a little note on it, what it's for, snap a picture, or if you're going to go paperless at the ATM, then you're going to have to write yourself some note. Write it on your phone, like, took $100 on this day, used it to take team to lunch or whatever. Now there are caps on how much you can use on restaurant bills. But
with the three margarita.
Another story.
Bill.
Right. Yeah. I think it's, I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. But yes, there are restrictions about that. So make sure that you are, just use some kind of cloud-based service. Keep them by year, by month, whatever you have to do. You must have that. Because the IRS commissioner now, Charles Rettig, his philosophy is that every expense should have some kind of accounting. It used to be that they're like, oh, you were at a conference, you took a cab, you know, we don't need that receipt. Now they're much stricter. He is sort of he's not a friendly tax man. So, yeah. Do you want to ask me some questions before we move on?
Sure. Drew David, here yeah. has a super chat. Registered paid tax preparers who have a PTIN are penalized for failure to sign returns.
Is that true? Okay. But then what's a ghost preparer then? If you're registered and you don't. So then why would someone want to do a ghost signing if it's not just your friend, right? So do you think then that they want to disallow friendly ghost? No friendly ghost tax preparers. I wonder. So that's, okay, that's interesting. So again, insist on a signature. And there usually is that space too in your tax return. Not usually, there always is. That will say, but it says tax preparers information and that kind of thing. So, yes.
Cynthia Ann saying, sure you told us out. Once that one morning that you really keep him on his toes about notes on spending.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I mean, I probably lecture him, you know? About this all the time. Not audit proof, but well, yeah, what you're ready for your audit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It means you're ready. You must be able to account for every dollar spent. And you know, in Tom's book, again, I've mentioned this a couple times. I'm gonna put it up on the screen so you know what to look for. He says that a lot of times the tax auditors will come into the office and they know that people hate them, and they just sort of, you know, they come in with their tail between their legs, like, I know you hate me, but I'm going to have to do it. And he says, I've had one lady just cry because we treated her nice, because she was not used to that.
Have you ever seen the movie Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell?
No.
You haven't?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Write that down. You need to write it down and watch it today based on your stories here.
Okay, I will. Stranger Than Fiction. Is it good for the kids?
Yeah, it's fine for the kids.
Okay, but they don't pay taxes, so they.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, it's a deep subject, so it's not like they're going to be like, "Ooh, this is cute. This is fun." It's
right,
but it's not dirty or anything.
Okay, I will watch it. If it's about taxes, I'm all about it. I would love to.
Oh, you'll love it. You'll love it.
Okay, so I showed you the book. Well, I will put it on my list. Okay, so get that book, everyone. Buy the book, read the book. It will help you be a diligent tax-paying citizen. You know, we all should. Do not use the shoebox method, where you just take your receipts and you shove them all in a shoebox, and then you hope it's there. Because then, in that case, I've had that happen before, where someone just hands me some receipts. Who do you think that someone is? And then the one you need is not there when you go and look. And even I am such a tax nerd that I do still listen to tax preparer podcasts. And one tax preparer made me laugh because he said, sometimes my clients will come in with like a shoebox full of their statements and they're still in the envelope sealed, like they were mailed from the company. And that person didn't even bother to open the envelope. Don't do that. Please open it up. Take a look. I mean, talk about someone who is not minding their finances, you know. So if that person is you, please head over to our Financial Freedom Academy and do our worksheet and give yourself a pep talk that you can do better. We can all do better. Okay. I realize not everybody is an organizational nerd like me, but
is that the one that's over at Morris Invest?
That kind of thing. Yes, morrisinvest.com. Yes, Financial Freedom Academy is our family wealth building workshop class. And we do not talk about taxes there. But the morrisinvest.com, you can get the worksheet and get started. And then if you like more, you can go to Financial Freedom Academy. I'm very proud of it. But again, you don't have to be an organization nerd like me. But I will tell you, the way I do it is I keep a Dropbox folder called receipts. I keep it organized by year, and then I keep it organized by month, so that if I were challenged on any given expense and they said, why did you buy this in, you know, this thing in whatever month, then I'd go and look for it and it would be there. And a lot of times, especially now everything's digital, like I'll buy something online and I'll get a confirmation from, say, Amazon, or let's say I bought a phone, right, on Apple, which is very obviously business expense. Or let's say I bought something that maybe is not obviously business expense. For instance, some kind of earphones, right, earbuds. Like I could use it to go jogging, or I could use it to do this show right now, right? And so I would buy those. And then I go into Finder where I've made a PDF of that email. So I just make a PDF of that email and I make sure, don't save it in your email client. That's not a reliable way to do it. And then I will, in a different color, I'll make sure, like, I type it in a little, I'll add a text box and say, this is for this, right? This is for this show, or it's for this. And it will be date stamped. So the IRS could know that I made that note back then. I didn't just go and doctor that up now. You know, you want to be ready. You got to be nerdy about this stuff, guys. Okay. Are we losing viewers because I'm talking too much about taxes?
Nope, we are not. We're actually gaining viewers. And I was just thinking a good newsletter segment might be Natalie's Nerdy News.
Yeah. Natalie's Organizational Tips. Did you ever see that episode of Friends where she's like, hey, everybody, you need to make sure the marker clicks when you close it because they will dry out. That is my favorite. That's me.
So you're Monica?
Speaking to me. It's speaking to my soul. Yes. I'm more Monica than anybody else. That's for sure. All right. Read me any more super chats, and then we're going to take a break, and I'm going to talk about our sponsor, Truebill.
We have some new members, but the super chat is, they should teach taxes and record keeping in high school. Same as cooking, basic life skills. Every person in this country needs to know these things.
Yes. Agreed. They should.
Then Frank DeLeo, Wall Street has ripped off the world for too long. U.S. treasuries are the past. Now all they have is the media, their taxes, their Elon, and their system.
Oh, we're going to talk about Elon. You hold your horses there. But yes, you know, I appreciate that. I've been reading this book. I'm going to find it for you. Let me look in my Kindle. About how there never was an accounting of the gold in Fort Knox. And the U.S. has been pretending that it is wealthy since 1933, when gold was banned. So back, FDR banned Americans from owning gold. He made them hand in all their gold back in the 30s. I want to say 1934. That's not an important piece of this story. The important piece is he mandated that all Americans hand in their gold. They could not own it, right? And he set the price at $25 a pound or an ounce. And no, that doesn't make sense. It must be an ounce. And then as soon as all the gold was handed in, locked up in Fort Knox, then he changed the price of gold to $34 an ounce, thereby giving himself a profit, giving the government a profit of $9 an ounce overnight, so making the U.S. wealthier. And then since then, there has been a movement to get an accounting for that gold ever since, because a lot of it is paid in foreign debt, and the U.S. pretends it's still there, but there is no record of it. And in fact, I think it was Truman who ran on the platform of asking for an accounting. So Truman was inaugurated on the 20th of January, and the audit was done like 3 weeks later, and it wasn't even a complete audit. It says in the information about this audit that they did not allow people to do what they were experts at. They did not actually get eyes on all the gold. They looked at 10% and then made an estimate. Like, how do they know it's 10% if they did not actually count? So there has never been an accounting of what the U.S. has, and we have been pretending to be a wealthy nation ever since. Now, again, the dollar is no longer backed by gold, but we must still pretend that our currency is worth something, right? So if we continue to print it without an accounting for what we have in assets, how do we have in a government?
Well, and it wasn't there.
Does that sound shocking to you?
Within the last few years, didn't Germany demand their gold back? And we were like, we don't have it.
What do you mean?
Like
they wanted their gold back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know that story.
We were supposedly holding it and we're like, yeah, it's not here kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. No one knows what's in there now, and to not have an accounting. So, I mean, this is the ultimate like hypocrisy, right? Now the IRS is saying, keep good records, keep a good accounting. We need to know what you've got so we can tax you on it. But we don't. We don't know what we got, right? We're going to keep getting a lot of debt. Like this is nuts to me. You know, I'm sorry to keep going back to like movies and pop culture, but if you've ever seen the movie Dave, where he calls in Charles Grodin, that was Charles Grodin in that role.
Yeah.
You know, the actor Charles Grodin?
Oh yeah.
He's in that movie Dave. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God, this is a great movie. And that was a great role for him. So Kevin Kline becomes the president, right? He's a doppelganger for the president. And he is in these budgetary meetings and he's like, none of this makes sense. So he calls in his accounting friend, Charles Grodin, and he says, if I ran my business like this, I'd be out of business. Have you seen that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Dave?
Yep.
Yeah. So, which is not your name. yes, that is a great movie. So this is exactly what comes to mind every time we do budgetary stories is this Charles Grodin movie moment where he says, like, most people cannot run their businesses the way the government does. Nobody can and succeed, right? So yes, this is the point that we were talking about, so that of that super chat, and I appreciate it. So before we move on, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Truebill. Now, how many subscription services are you paying for each month? Most people don't know. Most people just sort of let it drain their bank account without really thinking about, do I even need this anymore? Now, my subscriptions are loaded with Roblox because of my children, and I have to go in and cancel them a lot. If you had Truebill, you wouldn't have to stay on top of that because they stay up on top of it for you. Most people, 80% of people have subscriptions that they have totally forgot about. And again, it's just like a slot machine, you know, draining your bank account balances. Truebill is really an awesome way to manage your finances. It's easy to use and it just helps you review all of your recurring charges. You will get regular updates and it'll say, do you still want this? Do you still want this? Do you still want this? And then you're making conscious choices, right? They will also help you work with the nation's top providers to negotiate and lower your bills, such as your cell phone bill with AT&T, T-Mobile. And they also have bank level security. So because they're checking into your bank account, they need to have ironclad security because you've given them access. So most people think they spend about $80 a month on subscriptions when in reality it's closer to $200 a month. Truebill is saving users more than $50 million. So make sure you go to Truebill.com/invest to take control of your finances and start saving. Again, that's Truebill.com/invest. And make sure you have app approval on your little booger children who like to buy things inside games. So, yeah, V-Bucks. That's not part of the ad, but V-Bucks, Robux. My son's really into Fortnite. He always wants to upgrade his skin. You know, it's constantly, and I'll be like doing the dishes and I get something like Ava would like $9.99 in Roblox. I'm like, why? So, I usually make them like either earn it or take it from their allowance. That's a whole other thing. So thank you very much to Truebill. Okay. We're going to talk about crypto now. Now I'm going to let you know, I am not the crypto expert that Clayton is, so I'm not going to do any fun trades for you right now here on the show. And in fact, we were talking about it. I was telling David that, you know, cryptocurrency has ironclad security, but there is only one password and it is non-recoverable. And so Clayton right now is out playing golf. If he gets hit by a ball and has amnesia, all of our money is gone. So I need to do better at that. So here I am telling you, like, I'm an organizational genius, and I have let my husband go off without giving me the passwords to our investments in crypto. So here is one thing that you need to know is make sure you have shared your crypto passwords. There's something like, I want to say it's like $1 million in unclaimed crypto because people just die or forget it or something like that. Make sure that you are diligent investor and tell someone else your password or write it down somewhere or something. I don't know if I'm down with the write it down somewhere.
There's a guy who had made a lot of money with crypto and he couldn't remember his password. And I think it's, you get 10 tries, I believe. And then before it wipes your account. And so,
yeah,
I could imagine that stress. Like if you've got like, you know, $10 million in there, but you can't remember your password.
Oh my gosh. I know. Yeah. So, I mean, crypto is great. It is not for the not unorganized. Let me say that again. That's a double negative. It is not for the unorganized. You got to be on your game, you know? So yeah, organization is my superpower. It's, and so it's funny that we were just talking about this and then life got busy and I forgot to get those passwords from him. I get it from my mom. My mom is, also, organization is her superpower. It's kind of a lame superpower, but I'll take it. You know, some people are good at sports. I'm good at filing things. I'm good at spreadsheets. So, and hopefully I'm good at this. I'm doing all right so far, but I'm glad to be with you. Thank you again for sticking around because I know you were expecting Clayton looking handsome in a tie and instead you got me. But I'm doing my best. Okay, so I've been telling you we're going to talk about crypto and I'm not getting around to it. So how about we just do? Wall Street yesterday the government, the federal government. Sometimes Wall Street feels like the federal government. They both work hand in hand a little too much. The federal government wants to now regulate cryptocurrency and they're a little sorry they haven't done so before. One issue revolves around who has the power to swing markets and who doesn't, right? So a lot of people lost the farm on Bitcoin this week. Now, you know, Bitcoin had a big fat mood swing. You didn't lose if you didn't sell. Hopefully you held on if you bought high. But now regulators are worried that Elon Musk and people like him, are there really any people like him, that they might have too much power. Now, you might know Elon Musk has an agreement with the Securities and Exchange Commission about what he can and cannot tweet regarding Tesla because he has violated rules before where he discloses what they call anything material to the company cannot be tweeted without permission from the SEC. He agreed to that in 2019 because he has swung the stock before. But those rules don't apply to cryptocurrency, but the intention is the same, right? Because Tesla now owns a lot of Bitcoin. So if Elon Musk does something that affects Bitcoin value, it does affect Tesla's market value. And so should he be able to do that? There's really no rules against it right now. And this is definitely a tricky one because we live in a country with free speech.
And what's the difference?
Go ahead,
really?
Please ask.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, what's the difference really in, you know, like the news channels or PR press releases and stuff being sent out to do the same thing? I mean, they try to manipulate the markets. You know, he's just naturally
absolutely
doing it through
right.
thing, but they're doing the exact same thing.
I struggle with this one, and I don't know how regulators come down on these rules, right? Because I worked for CNBC and we can have any number of market manager, fund manager come on and say, I really think that Ford is going to do great. You know, they are then saying something that they hope affect the share price of Ford. Why are they allowed to do that? Now, we disclose it on, and in fact, there is even, when I was a reporter on CNBC, I had a reporter page that said that I owned shares of Apple, right? So that was there. It was available to be seen. I did at the time own shares of Apple. So then any Apple report that I did, I could then be accused of bias. I never really said anything other than, I mean, I was doing straight reports like they did launch an iPad, you know. But still, that needs to be disclosed. I think it's pretty clear that Elon Musk is personally vested in Tesla. So he is going to say things that, I mean, everything he shares is what the SEC calls material to the company, right?
But is it really any different? Like, so think about, like, if you have pharmaceuticals, right? They can run TV commercials and say whatever the heck they want on these pharmaceutical companies. But if you have something that's all natural, that's a more holistic thing or whatever, you legally can't talk about the benefits of it like you can a pharmaceutical drug. So it's kind of like the same thing. It's like, where's that line of regulation, and why can somebody not say something is benefiting them that's all natural and all that, but they can if it's a pharmaceutical drug?
Lobbyists have made those exactly. rules. He's all like,
exactly. That's so what it's I like, think. If, you know, if they're trying to yeah. shut Elon Musk up, then you have to look at who is doing that. And you'll probably find that it's a lobby firm because they don't like that he's manipulating their money.
But are there lobbying firms for cryptocurrency right now?
Well, I don't know that
what would be their interest?
I don't think it really comes down to the cryptocurrency so much as it does the market in general.
Right.
Because if
the
he
market
does,
followed Bitcoin down.
Exactly.
Because
if
week.
You. Yep, exactly. So if he says something, it doesn't just affect crypto. It affects the whole entire market.
Yes. Yes. And so can you limit one person's power? Right. And why? And well, Bitcoin, by definition, is unregulated, right? But can we regulate? And so this is what the federal government now is worried about. Can they regulate exchanges? For instance, Coinbase is registered in most states as a monetary transmitter, not an exchange, right? So they don't play by the same rules. Now the Commodities Futures Trading Commission wants to change that. But they actually don't have anybody at the head of that organization right now because Biden has not appointed one. So they have like a temporary guy. And so they're not really going to do that while they're not under permanent management. So they're behind the eight ball. But what they're saying is that they want apps like Coinbase regulated as an exchange, right? So then how things are traded is then under their purview, when right now it's really not. There also is a global task force called the Financial Action Task Force that wants to set standards for money transfers. They had rules that were proposed in March, but those have not been adopted yet. And then, of course, there's taxes. Now, if you own or invest in cryptocurrency, you must report it on your taxes. It is not money that just exists in the ether, and therefore, because it's not US dollars, it's not the IRS's business. It is because you used US dollars to buy it. Right. And in fact, even if you owned euro or owned pounds or whatever other currency, how you got that money is still, as a U.S. citizen, you still have to report that. So, of course, you have to report crypto. It's not just an IRS fine. It is a federal crime for lying on your taxes. So, for instance, Bitcoin forked in 2017, which means it split, and some investors treated it as a stock split, and some reported it as income. There are no rules about that now. The IRS just wants to keep tabs on those things, and so they are going around saying any crypto transfers worth more than $10,000 must be reported. But I wouldn't dare do anything less than that and not report it, because it's just too dangerous, especially once we get this Gestapo IRS, right? So report all your stuff. You know, crypto is good for a lot of things. Tax evasion is not one of them. Tax evasion is never a good thing.
Are you,
they also, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, are you familiar with Dr. Brzezinski at all, that story?
No.
No. Okay. So there's a doctor who came up with basically it's just a good cancer. I can't even think of the word right now. It helps cancer, right? So he came up with a method, and the FDA basically took him down, took him out of business and all this other stuff. And so my question always is, when they come up with these regulators, there's no one there to regulate the regulators. So it's like, you know, who, if somebody does start to regulate that stuff, Like who's going to regulate them? And that's the thing. It gets, it goes above those people and then it gets out of anyone's hands. Like then there's nothing any of us can do to regulate them.
I think Congress sees it as their job to do that. And, you know, our only power really is to call our congressman or woman and vote for the people you think would do that. But you're right. That does seem like unchecked power. But you would think, you know, that's why, I mean, but then there are lobbyists, right, trying to affect these decisions. And so they might say, hey, for instance, right, anyone making a lot of money in crypto may want to, maybe motivated to hire a lobbyist firm to tell their congressional representatives to stay out of it, right? And then that is how Congress is motivated, right? Hey, I will donate to your campaign. You make moves that help crypto remain unregulated, right? And so who's going to have the money to do that? Of course, I'm sure there are already lobbyists who represent cryptocurrencies. I don't know who they are. I haven't done any research on that, but I'm sure there are. The last thing that I was going to say that the federal government wants is they want exchange-traded funds for cryptocurrency. They have not allowed for that yet because... So what's an exchange-traded fund? It's like a bond or a... it's a collection of a bunch of different types of investments all under one ticker, right? So that's what a mutual fund is. An exchange-traded fund is like a mutual fund, but it's cheaper. They have lower fees. And so there are no exchange-traded funds for crypto, which is like you would take, you know, a couple of different altcoins, put it into one fund and give it its own ticker, and then you could invest in that fund. And then there's a fund manager. There's someone who makes decisions. We're going to sell out this. We're going to buy this. They move it around. The reason the SEC has not allowed for that is because they can't vouch for the exchanges. And so therefore, if they take Coinbase and they make it an exchange, then they feel a bit more secure about it than they allow exchange traded funds or any funds of crypto. That is something that I think it could be nice. It could be, you know, a good sort of entry. Usually exchange traded funds are a good entry into the stock market. So it could be great. But by definition, crypto is something that any governing body cannot verify, right? It's not supposed to be like that unless the government takes our current dollar and puts it on a blockchain, which I think will eventually happen in the next 5 to 10 years. But the cryptocurrencies we have right now must not be regulated, must not be touched, right? There will be no sort of third party connection between the IRS and any crypto account. Never going to happen. So now I think it's sort of like what the web was in the 90s, where you could just say anything, you could put up anything, you could, you know, and lawmakers were scrambling to catch up and come up with rules and understand the web. That's where we are right now. So it will shake out. Whether it shakes out fairly, I cannot vouch for, but something will happen, right? Do we have any comments about this that you can bring my attention to, please?
So people are saying taxes are like the draft. Avoidance is legal. Evasion is illegal. You can see I go back to the 60s. Did the Mormons really create our cash? Is that people are talking about how the Mormons are still able to hold gold or something like that. A lot of conversation. A lot of people want to know your signs, your star sign, you and Clayton and myself.
I'm a Virgo. That explains the organization. And Clayton's a Capricorn. So we have a lot of earth-based energy.
I'm a Sag.
And I have, are you? Oh, mm-hmm. Both my parents are Sagittarius. That's why you're so popular. Sagittarius, two Sagittarius parents is not awesome, but Sagittarius is a fun sign. Do you
Everybody knew you were a Virgo.
I'm going to take that back. Of course. Of course. You know what? I once looked up the founder of the Dewey Decimal System, and I was shocked that he was not a Virgo. Kind of scandalized by it, actually. I want to give you a book that I am reading right now. The Mormons did not create the our current money system. Actually, This book, I think, I'm trying to pull up the image, but I can. Okay, I'm just going to make it bigger on my screen. Talks about how the monetary system we have right now, why it is like this, why we have notes, why we used to use coins, right? Actual coins, because a coin was a standardized weight and size. And actually, the Roman government, hang on, I want to pull up my notes about this because this stuff is good.
While you do that, Frank DeLeo said, China warns its impoverished citizens not to buy crypto. The U.S. waits until its impoverished citizens buy crypto and then attack with the IRS.
I don't know about that. I think that China wants nothing unregulated. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think the U.S. is, in this instance, trying to issue some kind of... good gracious. I should have had this. I think this is the government's way of issuing a warning, saying, hey, we don't back this. We don't know how to regulate it. It's, invest at your own cost. I think China's motivation for warning against crypto now is a different thing. I think that they want, I want to find my Kindle notes because this is so good. Used to be that they were all at notes.kindle.com, but it's not there now. Ask you. Oh, I know. I could just pull it up over here. This is Natalie's book hour.
Natalie's Nook.
Exactly.
Natalie's book nook.
Natalie's book nook. It's like Oprah's book club, except I'm going to make you do your homework. Okay. Here it is. My notes and marks. Okay. So this is the book. And you must have your report in by next week, double spaced. Here we go. This book. I think it is a really compelling history of money. And I think that he makes a really strong case about why crypto is sort of a natural evolution of the layered money system that we currently have. It used to be that coins were... with like 90% gold, 95% gold. But he says, you know, throughout the ages, currencies have ceased to exist because of one rudimentary fact is that governments are unable to resist the temptation to create free money for themselves. So what happened was, you know, by the end of the third century, the denarius, which was the Roman coin, had been devalued so frequently that it had gone all the way down to 5% silver. So what that means is that I think it was under Caesar that it was 80% silver, 90% silver. And then the government just slowly stopped putting as much silver in the minting of coins and were, but the money was worth the same amount, right? And so they were charging themselves less to make the money, thereby enriching themselves, right? So this is common. This has happened since the dawn of time. And actually, coins were invented for international exchange of goods. It used to just be we exchanged services, right? But then coins were hard to bring across borders. A lot of times ships were sinking. And so they started to create notes. And actually... the exchange of funds, the first real like stock market was in Antwerp, and they used to exchange, like settle up their notes at the old like Renaissance type fairs. Like that was one of the purpose of the Renaissance fairs. I mean, this was during the Renaissance. They didn't call it a Renaissance fair, but you know what I mean? So these like fun things that we go to now, we're kind of celebrating the birth of a stock market and
they just called
money.
It a fair.
What do you think about that? Right. Yeah, I mean, they still had wenches and, you know,
beer,
peasant dresses and all of that stuff, right? But the really, there was business going on there. Did you know that? I've only been to one Renaissance fair, but I know they're popular, and I kind of love this nerdy background about it.
Yeah, no, I like going to them as well. Somebody has a great name for your, like, this needs to become a segment, Natalie's Nerdy Book Nook.
Yeah, Natalie's Nerdy Organization Tips. And then Natalie's Nerdy Book Nook, you know, like I'm going to make you a nerd just like me.
Kathy LaCroix,
I'm not
wonders,
sure where it gets me in life. Yeah, go ahead.
Kathy's wondering, if you only hold crypto and not sell or trade, do you have to claim that on taxes?
I think you do. I think you do. I'm pretty sure you do. I was listening to Tom's Wealthability podcast recently, and he actually had the author of this book, this Layered Money book. His name is Nick Bhatia. And I'm pretty sure that you do. That is not clear in all of these press reports. And actually, it was discussed a little bit. No, it wasn't.
Well, can you?
Yeah, it's just not clear yet.
Can you? So you have to claim a profit, but can you also claim a loss?
I believe you can.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you definitely can. But you report any of your holdings to the IRS. They need to know what you've got, even if you have not exchanged it or traded it. You have to report your investments. As far as I know, if we have that, the CPA who's still in the chat, please ring in on that. I would very much appreciate it. Okay, so before we move on, I want to talk about our sponsor, Grammarly. Now, have you ever meant to say something and it got lost in translation because your grammar wasn't right? Or has this happened to you? Autocorrect rings in on your message and then you send exactly the wrong thing. Well, that wouldn't happen if you had Grammarly, especially the Grammarly Premium, because it checks your grammar before you send messages digitally. It cannot check your written messages unless you scan it in. This happened to me once. I was arranging a party for one of my kids' birthdays, and my mother-in-law said, "What can I bring?" And I wrote her back an email saying, "Can you please bring some chips and dick?" Because autocorrect got in on that. I don't really write out the word dick very often. I don't know why that happened. In fact, I almost never type that. But for some reason, autocorrect had a sense of humor that day. So I literally sent an email to my mother-in-law asking her to bring her chips and dick. That wouldn't have happened if I had. Go ahead.
Phone,
you tell
my phone
story
changes
now.
You to tit every time.
What?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm like, can you bring over something? And I'll send. And then I'll look. And I'm like, dang it. It says, can you tit something?
Yeah. Or I had another one. When I was still nursing my first child, I texted Clayton that I fed the baby, and it changed it. This is really awful, to EFFED, the baby. I don't write that. Like, you know what that is, right?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, wow, I need to make sure that's not in my autocorrect. So these are things that would not happen if you had Grammarly. Grammarly gives you clarity suggestions, not just spelling suggestions, although that would be useful. Also gives you clarity suggestions. So you write more clearly, more concisely, without unnecessary or redundant words. My first job out of college was as a newspaper reporter, and I had this really, really great editor, and she was always like, keep it tight. And so I have like a really good radar for just wordiness, I think. And I think most people are definitely guilty of wordiness. So if you have Grammarly, it's going to make things tight, because of course, the more concise your message is, the better it's going to be received. It also has vocabulary suggestions, avoiding overused words and phrases. Also helps you expand your vocabulary, sound a bit more exciting.
It really does.
Go ahead.
I use it every day, and it's actually helped me learn where to put commas and stuff. Because a lot of times I just, you know, after school, I forgot that, like, punctuation. What's that? And now I'm realizing, oh, wow, I guess I should use that, because there's some things that can be taken completely different without that comma.
Oh, my affection for you is withering a little when you talk down about punctuation. Come on.
Yeah, it was. I love it now. I use it even in text messages now, but it's like, I just didn't know where to place it, because I, you know, in school you hear that stuff, but it's like, is this a comma? Is this a, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you stand on the Oxford comma? Do you know what the Oxford comma is? Is when you make a list of things and then you put a comma before the last thing.
Yes.
I go by AP style. Grammarly does like the Oxford comma.
They do.
And I do not. Yeah, because I was a newspaper reporter and we had to use AP style. So I can't do it. But Grammarly always wants me to.
Yeah, no, if it makes me put it in, yes, I usually do it. But if I'm making my own list,
I
don't.
Clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's usually a lot more clear to do it. I do think I understand why it puts it there. And I think the world is going towards the Oxford comma. Ring in on the Oxford comma in the chat. Say yes, Oxford, no, Oxford. I want to see what the general consensus is. But yes, you know, it's great. Everyone can be a better communicator. It really helps. And especially, you know, we're about to get into Mercury retrograde. So you need Grammarly during Mercury retrograde because you will not make yourself clear.
Oh,
most
no.
I'm glad that I'm not hosting.
Tech issues coming. We've got a no Oxford,
you know,
yes
it.
Oxford.
We only have one of each. Guys, I need a tiebreaker, please. What's a comma? All
right. Another one for no. So no wins so okay. far.
So, you know, I was going to talk about the global tax rate because Janet Yellen is saying that she wants to ask other countries to agree to a global tax rate. Do we have more appetite for taxes? I can give a break on taxes and we can come back around to it. What do you think?
I think
we're
taxes
heavy
is
on
good.
The taxes today.
Yeah, whichever, okay. whatever you want to do. This is your show today.
All right. Can you name any one country that has a 0% tax corporate tax rate? Corporate tax rate. We're not talking about personal taxes anymore.
I can't.
Anybody? Do we have Jeopardy music? Da-na-na.
I've gotten. These I've are got like Bossa Nova.
Okay, I'll give you 5 seconds. Let's see if anybody in the chat 0% corporate tax rate. Didn't anybody read The Firm?
As in the what became the Tom
Lebanon?
Cruise movie?
Yeah. Cayman Islands. Come on, guys. Come on. Okay. So, yes, Cayman Islands, Bahamas, Bermuda, Jersey, which is an isle in the, off of the coast of England, which I'd never heard of, and Guernsey, which is not also an island off the coast of England, which I have heard of. Because I read the Guernsey Literary Potato Peel Society book, which is cute. It's a cute read. So, yes, there are 10 countries currently with a 0% tax rate. And then there are many countries out there with a lower tax rate than the U.S. Janet Yellen wants the world to come to an agreement that all corporate tax rates have a minimum of 15%. In the U.S., currently, the corporate tax rate is 21%. President Biden wants to raise it to 28%, but we lose a lot of business to Ireland, and Janet Yellen doesn't want that. Now, why would the world agree to this, especially if Ireland benefits from, say, Apple setting up headquarters there? Why would they agree to this? I'm just not clear on, like... What is our pull? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and it's just like how like arrogant of us to even like say, well, you're going to do this. This is what the United States wants.
Right. Level the playing field for us. Right. Do we do that for anybody else? Not really. Right. That's not even like an American ethos. It's like,
I mean, think about like some of these countries that should be like, you know what, United States, take the log out of your own eye before you take the twig out of somebody else's.
Right. I mean, generally speaking, the American ethos is like in an open field of competition, the best person wins. Right. That's kind of like, I mean, it just, I know it's like a very Republican type of thing to say. But it's like free competition, whatever, you know.
Don't tread on me.
Except, right. Except like, don't compete with us for global businesses. You know, like, let's all have an even playing field. I'm not sure where they even get off saying this and what pull they have to ask. It does not seem like other countries really are on board with that. But she's saying that we're in this race to the bottom, right? So other countries are just going to keep lowering their tax rate in order to get businesses away from the U.S. But hey, can we like offer any other incentives to make it great to do business in the U.S.? You know, like, maybe we should think about making it the best we can instead of competing on a cheapness level. Incidentally, I looked up what are the countries with the highest corporate tax rate, Venezuela is at 34%. How's that working out for you? Brazil, 34%. And I didn't know this. United Arab Emirates has a 55% tax rate.
Wow.
So That doesn't sound like a fun place to start a business, but people do. I don't know. I don't know why they do that. So, anyway.
It's so crazy. It's okay. So backward thinking, too, because, like, if you think about it, we always talk about this circle of money. If the United States would invest in the middle class, because there's, like, no investment in the middle class, but if they invested in the middle class, they could keep lower tax rates and stuff would be fine because you'd have a happy middle class spending money, helping the corporations make more money. They pay a little bit more in taxes. So it's like, you know, it's this big focus on how can we get money without helping the middle class? How can we increase revenue without helping them?
Right. Yeah. In fact, the story that we wrote in the newsletter today, it was just in News by the Numbers, but it bothered me. And I really tried to sit with it to think, like, is my response to this in any way ignorant or racist or classist? It was a story about McDonald's. So the story was that you can help me. Don't call me a racist, but you can say, like, what I'm missing. I'm happy to open my mind about this, but this is what bothered me. There's a media entrepreneur who is suing McDonald's for $10 billion because he claims that the chain does not advertise enough with Black-owned media outlets. So he has a media outlet. He says McDonald's doesn't want to work with him and that is racism because McDonald's spends a lot of its ad money on with non-white media owners. So he's saying that Black people account for 40% of McDonald's customer base, but Black people only receive... Black media company only gets $5 million of the company's $1.6 billion in ad revenue, right? So that's like less than 1%.
But that, I mean, I guess that's so, kind of presumptuous because it's like if I'm buying ads personally, I'm buying ads where I'm going to get the most eyeballs. I don't even, race doesn't even come into it for me. I'm like, let's see, if I spend my money with this white channel, you know what I mean? Like, does race really come into your thinking as an ad buyer?
Well, it should if 40% of your your customer base is Black. Yeah.
Well,
now,
right, but
keep in mind that.
But even if you're advertising on those channels, there's still a huge Black audience watching. It's just not an only Black audience like that other channel has.
Right. But here's my issue: if 40%, okay. The American population is around 14% Black right now. They are overrepresented in McDonald's customers then. They are 40% of McDonald's customer base, but only 14% of the population. And he wants to advertise more to Black people, right? Or he wants Black media companies to get that. Not necessarily that is going towards a Black consumer. My problem with this is that McDonald's is fast food. Black communities are already saturated with fast food. One of the main complaints is that inner city neighborhoods do not have access to fresh food. Like you have to, you know, if you watch Ron Finley gives a great TED talk about his gardening efforts in the inner city. And he said he lives in inner city Los Angeles and he has to drive an hour to get an organic apple, right? And so they don't have access. They're oversaturated with access to this type of food. And now Black men are the most likely population to die of heart disease. In fact, they have the lowest health markers already. Why then are we arguing for more McDonald's as a part of this media that they are consuming, right? We have laws that protect children, like you cannot advertise to children during commercials or certain things like that. Like there are certain laws around what you can advertise to children, right? Because we want to protect a vulnerable population. I'm not saying that this population is like children. I don't want to make that connection at all. But shouldn't we protect a population from itself, right? Or I don't like the way they come out. Do you know what I'm saying here?
I get totally what you're saying. And the thing is, like, yeah, it's not so much protecting them from themselves, but it's like giving it,
I hate the way that just came out.
Yeah,
I didn't mean it that way.
It's the same, in my opinion, as the pharmaceutical industry. They should not be able to push these drugs to where people are going in and they're telling their doctor, I saw this ad on TV or whatever. It's like you're targeting people that, you know, especially McDonald's, you're targeting them with food that you know that they should not be eating. Right. It's almost like it's a disservice to people to push that when you should be pushing healthier options and stuff. But, you know, I think like if you've got 40% of your market is black or whatever, then, you know, I don't know. I don't feel like they should be advertising that kind of stuff on anywhere. Anyway, I don't like billboards. I don't like TV ads, any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just pushes the wrong agenda.
Like Michael Pollan says, anything that has a commercial is not worth having.
Right.
Like there are no ads for broccoli. And in fact, you know, the reason the pharmaceutical industry exists is because you can't put a patent on lavender for reducing inflammation. You can't put a patent on, you know, mint for, you know, stomach ache or that kind of thing. But you can patent a synthetic formula of that and sell it. And so that's why, you know, that industry makes so much money. Now, I'm not saying you could go out and like pick your own version of a COVID vaccine from a field, right? Obviously, there are advantages to pharmaceuticals. But yes, my point is, I mean, we just don't have a lot of protection around advertising to vulnerable populations, right? And obviously, the inner cities who are food insecure are going to then take advantage of 99-cent chicken nugget deals or something like that, more likely because they can't access fresh food. I just don't think that we should be arguing about trying to get this population more exposure to this brand familiarity when they are already overexposed. It breaks my heart, you know, that just like I don't understand it. So if you think that I am missing something here, then I would like to know.
Yeah. If McDonald's were, sorry, there's like a little bit of latency. So a lot of times it's like really hard when between you and I. Yeah. So if McDonald's were putting out really healthy food and they were, and their campaign was to not maximize profits, but to actually like put, like say, hey, we're better than other fast food places because we give you real quality food. You can come in and get a salad and all this other stuff. And we've got 99-cent salads, not 99-cent Big Macs, you know? So like but they could put more effort into helping people in that area than, you know, looking to, because the people that are going to McDonald's a lot of times are people that they don't have time because they're working two jobs. They don't have money because they're making not making a livable wage. So you have no choice but to eat at these places. And so they're wasting these ad dollars to prop up these news companies and all this other stuff, these TV stations, when these people are going there because it's in their neighborhood anyway. Like that's, they wouldn't even have to advertise to those people. So it's just like,
and I do think McDonald's. Yes. Yeah. I do think McDonald's is doing a better job at trying to improve the quality of their menu. I've been following this. My father is a big fan of McDonald's as an organization, and he made me work there when I was 16 because he wanted me to learn like systems and the way like a well-oiled machine works. You know,
you've seen The Founder?
I'm not sure how much I learned about that, but no.
The movie The Founder? It's all about McDonald's.
No,
oh
I haven't.
Oh my gosh, Natalie.
Is Ray Kroc is the founder of McDonald's? Is it about him?
Well, no, he's not the founder. No, he's not the founder. He's the one that took the company from the McDonald's brothers and made himself look like the founder. That's why you have to watch the movie.
Oh. It's okay. Look, you're giving me, I'm giving you book homework and you're giving me movie homework. Yeah. Writing this down. The Founder, and what was the other one I wrote down?
Stranger than fiction.
I'm on it.
So
my report.
Yeah, I've seen stories recently where they're kind of trying to get into healthier options, but it's funny because the McDonald's brothers themselves, they were pretty in the way of hamburgers, they were healthy and they wanted real ice cream milkshakes and stuff. And then Ray Kroc came in and like made them use the powdered crap milkshakes and was more about the bottom line. And so I do like to see that they are moving towards real food now more so. Because like if you go to McDonald's in Europe, you get better food than you get in the United States. You can't have all the crap that we get.
A lot of the chemicals are regulated out in Europe. Yeah, Europeans, they love bureaucracy. So if there's something they can regulate, they're going to do it. There's a super chat here from Amy Perkins. She says, I have a master's in marketing and we studied McDonald's. She said that they tailor their ads based on demographics in different areas. So they'll use black actors in lower income areas and then white actors in other areas. That makes sense. Yeah, that totally makes sense. But then they would need to use these media buyers, this media company, right? I just find this story, like, I just find it unsettling because I can't decide if I think it's selfish on the part of this person bringing the suit or not.
I mean, they're getting $5 million. I mean, it all boils down to, I feel like it, me personally, I get the same feeling. I get the same feeling that it's selfish because it's like you are getting money from them, but it's like I think you're making it an issue about race when maybe it's not. Like, look at your channel. What kind of viewership do you have? What kind of stats? Because these companies are risk mitigators. If they feel like they're not going to get the return on investment on spending money on your channel, that's the only reason they're not going to do it. It has nothing to do with anything else.
And an absolute defense is we are already saturated in the black community. We don't need to advertise, right?
If we've got 40%, we need to advertise to a white audience because that's the demographic we're trying to increase.
Or an Asian audience or any other, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. And actually, this lawsuit came on the same day that McDonald's already committed to upping its black-owned media spending from 2 to 5%. I mean, that's pretty nominal. And I don't know. Now you're saying like, oh, we should do this, right? So they kind of have undone their case a little bit. I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't want to make a final call on it because I feel like maybe there's something that I'm missing. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. So I appreciate the chat, though. I think a lot of people are saying like they appreciate the sentiment. I would love it if
it's good to have conversations. You know, I think that's the thing. People are so afraid. Like if anything feels like you've got to mention that this could sound racist, this could sound classist, this could sound like we kind of walk on eggshells around those conversations. And I really wish as a people we wouldn't, because with everything that we're going through, unless we all communicate and come move our way toward the middle, not planting our flags solid right, solid left, we're never going to fix any of these issues and get these people accountable for anything they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be willing to say like this sits wrong with me and I'm not sure. I mean, again, on the other end of the spectrum, then there are white owned advertising firms that are just going to keep spiraling up. Right. And this guy can't compete. Like, I get it. I get what he's saying. Like, you know, but at the same time, is that for the greater good to get more McDonald's in your community? Right. So like if we're making these woke decisions, right, it's not very woke to get more McDonald's in the inner city. So, OK, well, that's our show for the day. I hope you subscribed to morninginvest.com because we work really hard on it. I tell a lot of inside jokes in the newsletter. Hopefully you caught them. Did you? And oh, you know, there's a fun one today. Read the history of the Speedo. That was a fun article. We put a link to that in the chat. Also, last little bit of news is that the U.S. has decided it is not going to buy Greenland. So if you were hoping for that, that you
was
might
that
get a passport
even on the table?
Over to Greenland. Trump mentioned it during his administration that he thought it would be a nice thing to do. Now, Secretary of State Antony Blinken says, we don't want to do that. Not on the agenda. So not happening.
I was gonna say Iceland and adopt their constitution. That's what we should do.
What is the Icelandic constitution? Well, what does that have on us?
The only thing I'm saying, because like when we went through the housing crisis and all that, we, you know, bailed out the bankers and the people got screwed. But Iceland, not only did they bail out the people and put the bankers in jail, they wrote their own new constitution. So it's just like, it was a people, a people's movement. And I guess that was just my point, that like, we need a movement like that. We need, for the big people to pay a little bit here and have something benefit the people and maybe think about rewriting our constitution so it's better serves more people.
Yeah. I mean, the constitution was like in spirit of and by the people, but it doesn't seem to work like that anymore. I mean, that's the thing. Like, documents need editing as people move forward, you know?
Well, and especially since it was written in the 1700s. I mean, things have changed just a little bit since then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Clayton is texting that he would like me to tell you that 1Password is great for if you have passwords to share with your friends and family, because you can offer someone else access through 1Password. So he's going to send that to me so that if he takes a golf ball to the head or gets in a fight with someone and they fight with golf clubs and he loses his mind and develops amnesia. I hope these things don't happen, but you know, you got to prepare. Then, yeah, that's how you can share passwords with your family. 1Password. So, okay, he's rang in. You pipe down now. It's my show today. Thank you for joining. Thanks for allowing me to sit in the big girl chair. And I hope to see you again. And you will have Clayton back on Monday. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel, everybody, and the newsletter. And hug someone you love today. That's the show. See ya.